Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is July 7, 2023, or it's the 20th day of the fourth month, 2027. We're going to start our first service today face to face with Yahshua, my Savior. Face to face with Yahshua, my Savior. Face to face, where will it be? When with rapture I behold Him, Yeshua, who died for me. Face to face I shall behold Him, far beyond the starry sky. Face to face in all His glory, I shall see Him by and by. Only faintly now I see Him, with the darkening veil between. But a blessed day is coming, His glory shall be seen. Face to face I shall behold Him, far beyond the starry sky. Face to face in all His glory, I shall see Him by and by. What a rejoicing in His presence, when I banish grief and pain, when the crooked ways are straightened, and the dark things shall be plain. Face to face I shall behold Him, far beyond the starry sky. Face to face in all His glory, I shall see Him by and by. Face to face, O blissful moment, face to face to see and know. Face to face with my Redeemer, Yahshua, who loves me so. Face to face I shall behold Him, far beyond the starry sky. Face to face in all His glory, I shall see Him by and by. Have our sermon entitled The Background of Their Plight and Their Dietetic Cure. This is from track 14 of War News Forecast of E.T. Hollis. Now he wrote this track way back in I guess the 40s. Yeah, it had to be in the 40s. I'm trying to get the date here. In 1943. Okay, this would be part two of the War News Forecast, but the name of our sermon is The Background of Their Plight and the Dietetic Cure. It says, Isaiah chapter 7, verse 1 through 16, and it came to pass in the days of the Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of the Judah, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up toward Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. And he was told unto the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart was moved, and the heart of his people as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind. Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have taken evil counsel against thee, saying, Let us go up against Judah. Now that's the house of David now. This is the tribe of the lawgiver. Genesis 49:10 is a prophecy made back there with Jacob and his sins and his 12 sons. It says, A scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, that's Yahshua, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Unto Yahshua the gathering of the people is going to be. So it says, Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have taken evil counsel against his son, let us go up against Judah and vex it, and let us make a breach therein for us, and set a king in the midst of it, even the son of Tobiah. This saith the Yahweh, it shall not stand, neither shall it come to pass. For the head of Syria is Damascus, not heaven, and the head of Damascus is risen, not the Yahshua, and within 65 years shall Ephraim, that's the 10 tribe kingdom, be broken, that it be not a people. So here's your prophecy right here that says those 10 tribes that went into captivity in Assyria with Jeroboam as their king, that sold them out to the to those idolatrous Assyrians, Babylonians, what they developed into, and the head of Ephraim is Samaria, not heaven. And the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son, not the Yahshua. If you will not believe, surely you shall not be established. Moreover, the Yahweh spake again unto Ahaz, saying, Ask thee a sign of the Yahweh. Ask it either in the depth or in the height above. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt the Yahweh. And he said, Hear ye now, O house of David. Is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will you weary my Yahweh also? Therefore the Yahweh himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Butter and honey shall he eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land of Syria and Israel, that thou abhorrest, shall be forsaken of both your kings, Rezin and Pekah. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 1-8. Moreover, the Yahweh said unto me, Take thee a great roll, and write in it with a man's pen concerning Mahershala Hazbah. And I took unto me faithful witnesses for the recording, Uriah the priest, and Zechariah the son of Jerichiah, Jeberechiah, and I went unto the prophetess, and she conceived and bare a son. Then said the Yahweh to me, Call his name Mahershala Hazbah, before the child shall have knowledge to cry my father and my mother, the riches of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria shall be taken away before the king of Assyria. For the Yahweh spake also unto me, saying, again, saying, For as much as this people, Israel, refuses the waters of Shiloh, quoted to you by Genesis 49:10, a scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from his feet, until
the shallow comes, and unto him, which is Yahshua, just shallow, the protected the coming together of the people shall be. So it says right here, it says, for the Yahshua spake also unto me against him. This is a sign actually tells him. As if people Israel refuses the waters of Shiloh, that's that ever living water, the protected host of heaven, that goes suffering and rejoice in the risen and Ramaliah's son, glory in their national government. Now therefore, behold, the Yahshua bringeth upon them the waters of the river, strong and many, even the king of Assyria, and all his glory, and he shall come up over all his channels, and go over all his banks, and he shall pass through Judah, he shall overflow and go over, he shall reach even unto the neck, and the stretching out of his wings shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel. Now this is Emmanuel, is Yahshua, hearing this prophecy. So it says that the prophecy says that this land belongs to Yahshua, Emmanuel, the land of Israel. That's where he shed his blood upon that mountain. Golgotha, as I said, that is, though ancient Judah was not to suffer defeat by the confederacy of Israel, that's your 10 tribes, her brethren, and Syria, she was nevertheless also be brought under the tribute unto ancient Assyria. And as we shall see, the spirit of this confederacy did not end with that of the ancient Israel and Syria. As for the high points of this confederacy, some of which are still unfulfilled, fall into the sequence thusly. For the overthrow of both the ancient Israel and Syria by the ancient Assyria, as a divine judgment, especially upon Israel, for the confederating against her own brethren, the kingdom of Judah, Isaiah 7:2-9. Number two, for the birth of a man child, Emmanuel, unto a virgin, for a sign unto the house of David. Isaiah 7:13-14. Number three, the birth of a son, Mahershala Hazbaz, unto the prophet Isaiah himself, for the signs and for wonders in Israel. Isaiah 8:18. Number four, for the overthrow of Israel to occur before an Emmanuel had learned to differentiate evil from the good, and before Mahershala Hazbaz could say, my father and my mother. Isaiah 7:16. 8:4. Number seven, in the amplification of this cluster of the event, several facts stand out in the unmistakable self-interpretation. Emmanuel, number one, by virtue of his virgin birth, and his name, meaning, okay, let's read this again. In the amplification of this cluster of the event, let's start all over again. This is number seven. It says, in the amplification of this cluster of the events, several facts stand out in the unmistakable self-interpretation. Number one, Emmanuel, that's the name of Yahshua the Son, by the virtue of his virgin birth and his name, Emmanuel, meaning that the Son of the Yahweh, the Father, is with us in the flesh. That's the way it should read. Because Yahshua told the disciples, it's expedient that I go away, so I send you another comforter, the Holy Spirit. And he said, to be with you, because I can't be with you in the person until then. But he said that I will come again, and I'll be with you in the flesh again. And wherever I'm at, there you'll be also with me. So they had that promise. And that cheered them up. Matthew 1:23. Can only be Yahshua with us. Okay. Number two. He was born for a sign that the unholy alliance between Israel and Syria was to come to naught. Number three, the lands, Israel and Syria, which the Jews abhorred, were to be forsaken of both their king, conquered by the king of Assyria, before the Emmanuel was to be able to refuse the evil and choose the good. And before the Mahershala Hasbaz, his blood brother, the firstborn, was to be able to say, my father and my mother. So Isaiah, he had literally two sons, physical sons, by his wife, the prophetess. And that was Mahershala Hasbaz and Emmanuel, which was the type of Yahshua, or the type of the Emmanuels in these last days that has Yahshua's name. And that's Yahshua or righteousness. Jeremiah 23:5. But the simple historical fact that these two kingdoms were overthrown centuries before Emmanuel was even born brings a time discrepancy which can be reconciled only by the conclusion that all four nations, Judah, Israel, Syria, and Assyria, involved in this historical action were typical of the four others that were to arise sometime following Emmanuel's birth. For after his birth, Israel and Syria were to be conquered by Assyria. Okay. When was Yahshua born? Actually, Yahshua the son to a virgin. That was to Mother Mary. And that was in 4000 B.C. 1000 A.D. He was born in Bethlehem of Judea. Okay. Necessarily then, there must be found in the antitypical apostolic dispensation a backslidden apostolic power, Israel, confederated with a pagan one, Syria. So that would have to be the Seventh Day Adventist Church today. She's apostatized. She's Ellen G. White, the prophetess, says she is the spiritual Israel of today, and she's confederated with the Catholic Church, and she has joined them, and she is forcing her members to take this mark of the beast, to take this this mark of the Trinity doctrine, forcing it in all Adventist churches all around the world. A pagan one Syria, a Catholic Church. This is your as yet. Unto the end of assimilating or annihilating the Orthodox apostolic, and typical apostolic Judah, which is the shepherd's rod today, which is the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. The only such confederacy in the antiquity apostolic era was the unholy union of the church and state that ruled during the Dark Ages, and that sought the destruction of the born-again who refused to depart from the apostolic faith and submit unto an apostatized, apostolic, pagan, imperial Rome, or to Catholic Church Israel, which is the Israel-Syrian Confederacy, during the Dark Ages, as the Catholic Inquisition. That was during the time when the Catholics ruled both church and state, and they martyred over 200 million Christians during that 1260-year period, I said apostolic, that didn't apostatize, apostolic believers of the Nazarene Creed, foretelling unto Daniel the work of this wicked power, the angel declared. So the Adventist Church, confederating with the Catholic Church today, is called this wicked power. The angel declared, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given unto his hand until the time and times, and the divided of time, Daniel 7:25, as a natural consequence. Therefore, the type, ancient Assyria, finds its double in the power which in the Middle Ages broke up that church-state union. Now this church-state union means the Catholic Church formed a union with the Apostolic Church coming out of the Apostolic era of the first century A.D. There's your church and state union. The Catholic Church and the Seventh-day Adventist Church forms this church and state union. The Adventist is the church, and the Catholic is not a church. The heathen, pagan, only their connection with the Adventist Church gives them any identity as a Christian. And as that union was dissolved by the present Protestant nation, with the conclusion inescapably following that the modern Assyria reaches down unto our day. So, this certifying the fact that Isaiah's prophecy is correlated with the Nahum's prophecy. But since the ancient Assyria overthrew the Israelite Syrian Confederacy centuries before the Emmanuel was born in 4000 B.C., and since modern Assyria overthrew the church-state alliance of the Middle Ages, starting with Martin Luther, the Catholic monk that came out of the Catholic Church, he was the leader of this Assyrian overthrow of the Catholic Church and State. Church and State, when I say Church and State, I mean Catholic Church and, the State is the Catholic Church, and the Church itself is the apostolic church that had apostatized and were taken captive by the State. Of the Catholic after he was born. Logic demands that Assyria, Judah, Israel, and Assyria are taught. So also Emmanuel must be. Wherefore the virgin birth prophecy does not refer alone to the birth of the Yeshua, but even more significantly unto his followers by the birth and development of the BPLs use this word Christendom. Let's go ahead and let that stand for the time being. Meaning Protestantism. He should have just said the birth and development of Protestantism. Protesting. Because Martin Luther started the protesting in 1500 A.D. Now John Knox came in 1543 with the second protest message of the Holy Spirit. John Wesley came with the third protest message of the Methodist out of England with the doctrine of grace. Alexander Campbell came with the fourth protest message, baptism by the immersion, protest against the Catholics and their sprinkling. And 1810, the Baptist Church had developed into. Correspondingly, Mahershala Osbard must be symbolical of another group in the antitypical apostolic era. Okay, so now we got to have another protest group. That's the antitype of Martin Luther, John Knox, John Wesley, Alexander Campbell, William Miller, and Ellen G. White. You've got to have another protest movement using those same six doctrines and republishing them as the last protest against this church-state union that has just been set up again by the Catholic Church and the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Still further. And as he knows only to say, my father and my mother, writes, while Emmanuel Yeshua in the person of his people knows to refuse the evil and choose the good. Mahershala Osbard manifestly cannot symbolize any who lived before the Emmanuel. Still further, the fact that both were to be born into the house of Judah, the church, which would be the house of David, the lawgiver. Still further, the fact that both were to be born, Emmanuel and Mahershala, were to be born into the tribe of Judah, the house of David, the church. Well, the Adventist church was not the tribe of Judah manifestly alone, and it was not the house of David when it started in 1844. She produced the house of David. That was her last born son, the Emmanuel. The Adventist Church produced the Mahershala Osbards and the Emmanuels again. And that was when she produced the Shepherd Rod Church, the Division Seventh-day Adventist. Then was born the Antitypical Emmanuels and the Mahershala Osbards. To re-manifest the protest that the Adventists could protest in 1929 when they laid down the gauntlet and it caused that wound to be healed, and Yahweh raised up B.T. Hollis, the Shepherd Rod leader, to reintroduce those protest messages of Martin Luther, John Knox, John Wesley, Alexander Campbell, William Miller, and Ellen G. White, all over again. Still further, the fact that both were to be born into Judah, the church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, would be the house of David, which would be Gilead Center. That's the only place that they were reborn again, was at Gilead Center. One of the spirits that Brother Johnson presided over from 1970 to 2003, and I spent the whole 33 years right there in Kermit with it, with Brother Johnson. I had joined him and the other flesh. is conclusive evidence of their being as the prophet said, for the wonders and for signs of the two classes of church members living at the same time. Having been pre-existent with his father in Hebrews 1, 1 and 2, John 1, 1 and 2, and then having been reborn in Bethlehem, Emmanuel manifestly represents the born again antitypical apostolic protesters, the born again Emmanuel, John 3, 3. Whereas, never having been pre-existent Mahershala Hasbaz, can only symbolize those not born again, that part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, without the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, the Shepherd God, membership, which cannot be represented by the Emmanuels. The Emmanuels come out of the Shepherd Rod Church of the Leaky Hollow, not the Seventh-day Adventist Church of the Ellen G. White, because they were born in 1930. Mahershala Hasbaz, Seventh-day Adventist, represents Seventh-day Adventist, died in 1930 when the Adventists quit protesting against the Catholic Church, causing that Catholic Church to heal. A parallel is found in the allegory of the Ishmael and Isaac, typifying the born after the flesh and the born after the spirit, the non-apostolic Jew and the apostolic Jew, and the typical apostolic Jew. See Galatians 4, 22 to 30 and 31. And the clear focus of these facts, there comes to the light that the truth that the born again believers who lived when the ecclesiastical Rome fell, and who are represented by the Emmanuel, were spiritually too young, not far enough along in the time, and corresponding Bible knowledge and the spiritual progress to disseminate or discriminate the evil from the good. Consequently, they must attain unto this knowledge in the Assyrian Protestant period, for the Confederacy of the Israel and Syria, let us remember, was to be broken by Assyria after the Emmanuel was born, but before he could refuse the evil and choose the good. And not only after Mahershala Hasbaz was born, but also before he could say my father and my mother. And the fact that the church is still imperfect shows that even the born again believers in the truth are unto this day unable. Let's do it again, the born again Emmanuels. Well, let's call it right. We're dealing with Mahershala Hasbaz and the Emmanuels, his types. Mahershala Hasbaz being born of the flesh, and Emmanuel being born of the spirit. Okay, so now it says that. And the fact that the Seventh-day Adventist Church is still imperfect by 1930 shows that even the born-again believers, those that were Seventh-day Adventists following the prophecy of the 2300 years prophecy of the atonement and of the five angels' messages, and of the cleansing of the sanctuary, and of the judgment of the dead, and the judgment of the living. That's what the 2300-day prophecy taught. And the restoration of the sanctuary back to its rightful order. That was the prophecy of the 2300 days of 1844 that was given unto Ellen G. White. And that prophecy also was given that Ellen G. White and her people were to prophesy the message that William Miller had been for 11 years prophesying, that they were to give it again to many nations, but William Miller had given. That was the Adventist Commission. And the Adventists had accomplished that commission by 1890. They accomplished that commission by the time that they reached 1890. And the fact that Seventh-day Adventist Church is still imperfect by 1930 shows that even the born-again believers in the advanced truth of the 2300 day prophecy of the unrolling of the scroll, they're the born again, those that accepted the shepherd rod explanation of the rod movement, of the Adventist movement, those that the Adventist church that accepted the shepherd rod explanation of it, I said, that is your born again Emmanuels of this prophecy of Isaiah chapter 7 and 8 are to this day unable to choose consistently between good and evil, and that those who are merely born after the flesh are so undeveloped as to be unable even to lay positive claim unto knowing their father Yahweh and their mother the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Well, the obvious lesson is that at the time one is converted, born again unto Yeshua, he is but a babe in the antitypical apostolic life, and needs for the time being to be fed as a newborn babe on the sincere milk of the Word, that he may grow thereby. 1 Peter 2:2. So the Apostle Paul, in inspiration, interprets the milk to be the first principles of the oracles of Yahweh, Hebrews 5:12. And through Isaiah it asks, whom shall he teach knowledge? And whom shall he make to understand the doctrine? Then answering its own questions, it declares, them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breast. Isaiah 28:9. But the main lesson of the Isaiah chapter 7 and 8 teaches that the Seventh-day Adventist Church collectively born in the first century A.D., which would be the early apostolic congregation of the Nazarene that it's talking about, is today about to pass from her childhood and be fed strong meat. So we're going to have to update this. We're going to have to bring this date up to 1844. Let's do it again. But the main lesson of Isaiah chapter 7 and 8 teaches that the Seventh-day Adventist Church collectively born now in 1844 is today about to pass from her childhood of just feeding on the three angels' messages, and a theme song of righteousness by faith, but not knowing how to teach it from the Bible, how to come to perfection with it. That showed that they were babes, still babes, through up to 1930s, when the Adventist Church put proper sign against the Catholic Church. Is today about to pass from her childhood and be fed strong meat, so as to empower her to choose the good and refuse the evil. So the shepherd rod then, Yahweh gave them the understanding, Vitya, how to understand how to interpret the prophecies more fully to the Adventist, and that was starting to feed them strong meat. They've been feeding on the milk of the word clear up from 1844 to 1930. For everyone that uses milk, inspiration declares, is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. That's all Adventists had to feed on from 1844 to 1930 was just the milk, because those Jesuits, Catholics, had infiltrated the Adventist Church so thoroughly from their infancy on up from 1844 clear on to 1930, that they kept the teachers of the Adventist Church from teaching their students how to follow along the inspired word on a day-to-day basis. So they had the inspired word given to them in 1844. And the teachers, all they had to do was just continue on teaching the inspired word, and Yahweh would add to it more things during each day. But they quit teaching the inspired word along the way. The strong meat belongeth unto them that are of the full age, even those who by reason of the use have the senses exercised for the discerning both good and evil. Hebrews 5:13-14. Obviously, as time progresses, so the truth and the antitypical apostolic believers advance commensurately with it. Having fed on the milk only the Seventh-day Adventists since 1844 to 1930, on the simple, having fed only on the simple elementary revelation of the Word through the long years of her infancy and childhood, the Church has finally come to the stage where she must take strong meat. Also, the advanced latter-day revelations of the Word. This becomes all the more obvious as we consider that when Assyria in the Middle Ages dealt the deadly blow to the Church. Now this is the Apostolic Church of the Nazarene of the Dark Ages that had joined the Catholic Church, but they were the ones considered the Church, and the state was considered the Catholic Church. We have new light, folks. The antitypical apostolics that had apostatized and joined the Catholic Church during the Dark Ages, they represented the Church, but the Catholic Church, being pagan from the very beginning, they represented the state part of that coalition of church and state. The antitypical apostolic apostatizers that joined the Catholic Church during the Dark Ages, they represented the Church, and the Catholic Church itself then moved on to represent the state government. For this becomes all the more obvious as we consider that when the Assyria in the Middle Ages, led by Martin Luther, the Catholic monk that came out of the Catholic Church and protested against their false doctrine, so the Middle Ages dealt a deadly blow to the church-state union of that day. Neither Mahershala Hasbard, the first-born Christian, nor the Emmanuel, the spirit-born believers, were mature enough, as we have seen, to refuse the evil and choose the good. Now, though they must be coming into full maturity, for not only have many years passed since the Assyrian dealt the blow to the church-state union, but also has come the time for the Assyrian herself to fall. Besides that, the strong meat too is already here. So if the church-state union that ruled the world represented a world one world government and a totalitarian government, church and state, during the Dark Ages, then when she fell, then the Assyria that caused her to fall took over the church-state union. The Assyrians took over the church-state union. That would mean that you have the Democrat and the Republican rules represented by the Assyrians. Try to rule over all nations with a democratic government. Unquestionably, the time has come for all church members to realize that they are now passing from the apostolic childhood, an antitypical apostolic childhood of 1844. Unquestionably, the time has come for all the Seventh-day Adventist church members to realize that they are now passing from the antitypical infancy of the childhood into the apostolic, full-blown apostolic, Protestant, protesting maturity, and should therefore no longer try to reach the stature of the full-grown by continuing to feed on the food of birth. Hence, each one, even the younger members, born after the flesh, can now be unable to recognize their spiritual parents so as intelligently to say, "My father and my mother," for to know their Yahweh aright through the Son, and to know the church aright through the time of truth, is what brings the eternal, and each assimilates the strong meat, he will thereby become wise and strong to refuse the evil and choose the good. Of the necessity, therefore, the special work for the Seventh-day Adventist Church predicted in the Great Controversy, page 425, has been ordained for the bringing of every honest member to the antitypical apostolic believer's maturity. Accordingly also, the two foods that the Emmanuel was to eat in order to refuse the evil and choose the good must be symbolical, for the butter and honey in themselves possess no virtue of efficacy to transmit moral discernment, vitalize the will, and purify the heart. Besides, he ate of all the lawful foods in the general, Matthew 11:19. For these two points, therefore, witness that the butter and honey are symbolical of the scriptures unfolded, meat in the due season. For the only food that gives one the knowledge and the will to do right instead of wrong, just like Jesus said, I have meat to eat that you know not of. For the John 4:32, hence the believer who would truly know, the apostolic believer, that his Yahweh and his church, in the order to be emptied of the evil and be filled with the good, must now feed on the present truth, the progressive truth of the living word revealed through the inspiration. For the interpretation of the remainder of the Isaiah 7, see our tract number 6. As one sinks the shaft deeper into the mind of the truth, he finds that when inspiration makes grass figurative of the people, it accordingly makes rain figurative of their spiritual nourishment. Timely truth. Thus, when the terms grass or wheat or corn are employed to designate the people in the latter days, then the spiritual food necessary to bring them unto their full stature, believers as spiritual believers in the present truth, statures is appropriately termed letter ray, Zechariah 10:1, and to show that it is for the uplifting of the humanity, Joel gives its personification in the term a teacher of righteousness, Joel 2:23. In this advanced light we see that the letter rain, Joel 2:23, and the letter Pentecost, Joel 2:28, are two distinctly separate and successive but intimately related manifestations of the Holy Spirit. One gift is a special truth, a teacher of righteousness, arousing the church from her little synod and fitting her members for the final gospel work in all the world. For seeing them actively engaged in this work, the spirit of truth be perished. All fear of their relatives was gone, and the truth alone was exalted unto them. I asked what had made this great change. An angel answered, it is the latter rain, the refreshing from the presence of the Yeshua that is here in person at this time. The loud cry of the third angel. That's quoting L.G. White, early writing, 271. For the other gift is a special power, translating unto each recipient the dynamic virtue of a seer, enabling them to proclaim the special truth into all the world. I heard those clothed with the armor speak forth the truth with the great power, continued the spirit of the prophecy. It had effect. Many had been bound, some wives by their husbands, and some children by their parents. For the honest who had been prevented from hearing the truth now eagerly laid hold upon it. For the special truth, our knowledge of the scriptures, is obtained as a result of praying, hungering, and thirsting for it at the right time. Zechariah 10:1. Then the latter rain, or the refreshing from the presence of the Yeshua, will come to give power unto the loud voice of the third angel. Early writings 86. Thus far, the gift of the latter rain as with the additional message, his power and force through the old message, for the gift of the latter Pentecost as addition of the Spirit's power, subsequently his power and force unto the latter day messengers, for this miracle working power accordingly comes not because of praying for it, but because the messengers through the latter rain have met the condition for receiving it. With the uninformed human beings as we are, being uninformed human beings as we are, though we determine for the getting the special power instead of the special knowledge, that alone will enable us for the using of the power aright, so we find men praying out of season, ignorantly or presumptuously, for that which they are not asked to pray for, and not praying for that which is in season, and for which they are admonished to pray. Light is sown for the righteous. Hence, no church can advance in the holiness unless its members are earnestly seeking the truth as for his treasure. That's quote Miller G. White, Great Controversy 520. For the Yahweh to give the Pentecostal power unto one before he comes into the full spiritual growth would be as injudicious as for a state board to give a physician's license to a medical student before he earns his doctor's degree, and should the Yeshua invest us with the miracle working power, the experience that we desire, before he endures us with the miracle knowledge of the scriptures which we need, he would thereby be doing us no more favor than would the state in issuing a driver's license to any and all applicants, regardless of their qualifications to drive an automobile. Both being injudicious acts, they could but result in the casualty to oneself and unto others. This is why those who seek the miracle power of the Spirit, while not themselves men with the miraculous knowledge of the Bible, obtain either nothing or a fatal counterfeit. Whereas those who seek to know themselves and the truth are filled with a knowledge beyond their expectation. And having learned what they actually are and what they ought to be, they too, like Isaiah and Paul, Isaiah 6:5, Romans 7:22 and 23, become humble in their own estimation, the powerful and faithful servant in the Yeshua's name. Hence, by the timely unfoldment of these simple yet profound figures, no one should now fail for the recognizing of the signs of the times, and no one should now cheat himself of the truth they proffer, for it alone can fit the saints for the Pentecostal power, as says the Yahweh. And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my Spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions. No longer wait, therefore, but now ask ye of the Yeshua, that's the Son, rain in the time of the latter rain. So the Yeshua shall make bright clouds and give them showers of rain unto everyone grass in the field. Zechariah 10:1, Joel 2:28. For the urgent lesson here to be learned is that those who are ever progressing, keeping pace with the march of the truth, are the only real spiritual born-again believers. And though even the most advanced of these have not yet reached the high status, their full growth set for them by the Yashua inspiration in this latest feast of the butter and honey, the latter rain, proper charity, building, and material for all. As a result of this, thousands of the first fruit ones at first remember Revelation 7, 3, 8, and Revelation 14, 1 to 5. And millions at last, Revelation 7, 9, and Micah 4, 1 to 3, and Isaiah 60, verse 5 and 6, will, having finally matured for the harvest, actually achieve the Yeshua standard and come in the unity of the faith. Unity of the faith in what? Faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yeshua, Hebrews 10, 19 and 20, and verse 29. Perfect man, of the knowledge of the Son of Yahweh unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yahshua, Ephesians 4:13. What a bountiful harvest of the full-grown spiritual anatypical apostolic believers are to be gathered or to be garnered in. Isaiah 8, 9, and 10. Associate yourselves, O ye people, and ye shall be broken in pieces. And give ear, all ye of the far country, gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Take counsel together, and it shall come to naught. Speak the word, and it shall not stand, for the Yahweh is with us. For the statement, Yahweh is with us, implies that he is not with the nations that are affiliating themselves for the mutual protection, and that therefore they shall be broken, whereas his followers shall then be delivered. Nevertheless, for Yahweh to be with us in this special sense, we must make a special effort for the being with him, and for the doing this, we must sincerely study his way and follow joyously in his stately steps, which lead us unto a full knowledge of the prophetic mystery, enabling us to avoid the pitfalls and to stand through all other falls. So following on to know the way, the truth, and the life, we continue our inquiry into the Isaiah's prophecy of Isaiah 8:11-22. For the Yahshua spake thus unto me with a strong hand, and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, say ye not a confederacy unto all them unto whom this people shall say a confederacy. Neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. Sanctify the Yahshua the host himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. And he shall be for a sanctuary, parentheses, as for the followers of the truth, that for a stone of the stumbling, and a rock of the offense unto both the houses of Israel. That's your 144,000 combined all together, the 12 tribes. For a gin and for a snare unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem. We know the 144,000 are purified saints that are going to escape as the first fruits harvest out of Evan's shirt. But 144,000 is made up of both the 10 tribes Israel and the 2 tribes Judah. And many, therefore, among them shall stumble and fall, and be broken, and be snared, and be taken. This is bind up the testimony, seal the law among the disciples, that is, the followers in the truth, and I will wait upon the Yahweh that hides his face from the house of Jacob, that I will look for him. Behold, it is now plain to see. I and the children whom the Yeshua hath given me are for signs and for wonders unto Israel. From the Yeshua of the host, that's the Son, which dwelleth in the Mount Zion, that's in the house of David, and that's in the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44 and 45, that has come down with Yahshua sent upon the throne of David in this everlasting kingdom. And when they shall say unto you, unto the sealed one, speak unto them that have familiar spirits and unto wizards that speak, and that mutter, should not a people seek unto Yahweh for the living and to the dead? For to the law, Exodus 23:17, and to the testimony, Revelation 19:10. If they speak not according unto this word, it is because there is no light in them. And they, those in the darkness, shall pass through it hardly, beast dead and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves of the famine, and some small curse their king and their Yahweh hath, and some small, and some shall look upward and be converted, and they shall look unto the earth and behold the trouble, trouble and darkness, dimness of the anguish, and they, the rejecters of the latter rain, shall be driven into darkness in the day of the power which destroys the wicked and delivers the righteous. This brings in verse 56 hour contact, just at the 11th hour call, and number 11, click on our audio archive, we'll close now.